Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. By now, the country is talking about the opening or the reopening of businesses in several states. And that has raised a lot of concern because in the minds of many, the pandemic is far from over. Many people are feeling that opening up businesses that are quote-unquote non-essential is way too soon, and that there's a nefarious agenda attached to the reopening of these businesses. We wanted to find out what's going on and get some perspectives from that, and want to find out what's happening in the great state of Georgia. We're talking to a journalist and a public policy director. His name is George Chidi, and he wrote a column the other day that really laid out some viewpoints that I think underscores the thought that maybe there's an additional agenda attached more than just wanting to open businesses. So, George, welcome to the show, and how are you doing today?
I'm good. It's been a strange couple of days.
I can imagine. What's it like right now in Georgia where you're at?
So, like most folks, I'm sheltering in place. The people around me are sheltering in place. I'm sort of sitting here, like, doing shelter shaming as I, you know, hear stories about people being in places they probably shouldn't. There's a lot of fear, which is about what you'd expect right now. Also, a lot of people are pretty angry at the governor for suggesting that a massage parlor or a bowling alley is an appropriate place to be right now, with his order that rescinds a previous order closing those businesses.
Now, there's a few things going on that, you know, at least with respect to our listeners, raise a lot of concerns. The first being that there are quote-unquote vulnerable populations, more specifically black folks, who are disproportionately impacted by this coronavirus. And not just directly from the virus itself, but also the impact that it's having from the sheltered in and many of the jobs that are being lost, et cetera, et cetera. Long after this pandemic has disappeared, the after effects are going to be felt in many of our communities. How is it playing out in Georgia?
Well, we've got probably about 1.1 million filings for unemployment right now. They haven't worked all the way through. And nationally, we had another 4.5 million people file for unemployment, which means we probably got another couple hundred thousand here in Georgia, 100,000 anyway. There's a real fear in my mind that the government believes that they're not going to be able to pay out on all of these claims and that it's going to create a tremendous fiscal impact. And the thing that concerns me broadly is that when there's an economic downturn, black people are the first people who get fired. There's a lot of academic support for that statement. It takes African-Americans about twice as long as white people who are similarly skilled to find a new job, because discrimination in the marketplace is pretty endemic, and that's everywhere. So seeing the unemployment system work effectively is important. It's important to me, in part because I am losing my job to the pandemic. My last day of work is on middle of May. So I'm paying attention to this stuff, and which is part of the reason why I was shocked when I saw that Governor Kemp rescinded his previous order closing down businesses like nail salons, where social distancing is basically impossible. It's incredibly frustrating to watch.
Now, one of the things that caught me with your column was juxtaposing it with what we were seeing. We saw all these protests taking place all over the country, even here in California. And, you know, they had the signs, give me liberty or give me death, and, you know, and sheltered in is like slavery, all kind of outlandish things. And as we saw all this anger being directed at various governors and a demand for people to go back to work, there were some things that we didn't hear being advocated. We didn't hear any of these people that were at these protests demand that there be a moratorium on rents or mortgages or evictions. We didn't hear any sort of demand to have maybe more payments paid out to folks. It was really about send people back to work. And then when I read your column, and you can raise some of the points that you highlight there, it seemed like, oh, you want me to go back to work for you while you will stay sheltered in place or away from the fray. That's what I really gathered from that. Is, am I wrong to have that conclusion? Because I know what I certainly didn't hear at these rallies.
So, like, the rallies, and I should mention, I'm a long-term observer of sort of alt-right public behavior. Mm-hmm. I had a video go viral when I caught a Klansman at a rally wearing FUBU sneakers a few years ago. These rallies are AstroTurf. They are ginned up political drama, like intended to undermine public support for Democratic governors. And most of the people who are there are they're dupes. They're not reflecting the general sense of what the country, even among conservatives, think about how any of this should be handled. But they create a media spectacle. And we live in a time where media spectacle seems to be the thing that moves the needle. It's incredibly frustrating to watch. 80% of the country disagrees with those protesters, but there they are. And there are handfuls, like a few hundred, maybe 1,000, in states with millions and tens of millions of people. But set that aside. You're looking at the class question here. People who are relatively poor, who cannot do work that is socially distant, being told, go back to work, or we will threaten your unemployment coverage if you choose to stay home. Because that's essentially what happens if the governor rescinds this order. It changes the Federal Department of Labor's guidelines for COVID unemployment payment say that having a fear of catching the disease is not in itself sufficient to qualify for unemployment coverage. If you have a job and you're not going to it because you think you're going to get sick, that alone doesn't mean you're going to get paid $600 a week plus whatever your regular coverage is.
Wait a second. Let's just repeat that again so everybody can really hear what you said. I don't want people to miss that. You're saying that if I'm sitting here right now where people are walking around with masks, and I personally have a couple of people who have been on ventilators, one of them have passed. There's not too many people in my neighborhood who don't know somebody who's been impacted directly. I mean, you know, on a physical sense, having to go to the hospital, et cetera, by this virus. And we're being told to go back to work. And we say, no, I'm concerned because I know exactly what the risks are. We're saying that we're not that folks in Georgia would not be eligible for unemployment if they've.
Wow. It's not just Georgia. Like, that's the national rule. And there are, now it's more complicated than that. If you can argue that you are at a particular risk because you're obese or diabetic or have a cardiopulmonary problem or are a caregiver for somebody like that, or likely to be in close contact, you'll qualify, but you'll have to fight. Like, it's not a done deal. You'll have to show evidence to the local, you know, Department of Labor in order to make the case. There's nothing automatic about it. And when I see that, I realize that different states are going to have different standards for how they apply that question. And I live in Georgia, which is a very conservative state around these things. Unemployment coverage is conservative. Let's just put it like that. So what it does is set people up for a fight. And if you're poor, your resources for fighting for, you know, unemployment coverage are fewer. It's easier to screw you. It's easy to screw poor people out of money. That's why they get screwed out of money. So if you work at a nail salon and you're an actual employee and the nail salon opens, which it might because their insurance coverage isn't going to cover themselves if they're not open or not trying. And your boss says, yeah, you got to come into work. And you say, no, I can't. Like, I'm going to get sick. This is crazy. You're no longer going to be covered by unemployment. That's the problem. And I think that that's directly tied to, you know, what is looking like a 16 to 20% unemployment rate and unemployment funds that aren't robust enough to cover that over 6 months.
Wow. Let's talk about the Constitution that is set up in Georgia. You raised that in your column and you pointed out how that plays in or can play into what we're currently seeing.
Sure. So a lot of states can raise money when they need to. They'll raise taxes, you know, and it'll hurt and it's terrible and it's politically difficult. But Georgia is a state which capped its ability to raise taxes with a constitutional amendment about 2 years ago. Set the limit at 6%. And what that means is, by the way, Georgia's at 5.75% right now for income taxes. So there isn't a lot of room to raise income taxes. What it means is if they chose to try to raise income taxes in order to cover shortfalls, it would require another constitutional amendment, which is fairly difficult to get. Like, it's Georgia, so you'd have to go to voters, all the voters, all at once. You couldn't just do it at the legislature and say, you know, I need 50% plus one of you to agree to raise your taxes in order to cover these shortfalls. In Georgia, that might not happen, even though it would be the intelligent, decent, moral, financially sensible thing to do. They're capped at 6%. So once the unemployment fund runs out, they've got to find money. And politically, that's going to be incredibly difficult. It's not just that they're capped, like in terms of being able to raise tax revenue. They also are capped constitutionally in terms of how much money they can borrow. They can only borrow up to 5% of the previous year's revenue. And in this case, it would be about $1 billion. $1 billion is 10 weeks of unemployment coverage at the current rate of payout, give or take. I don't see how they're going to be able to borrow enough money because they're capped. They would need the federal government to give it to them. And that's not really a guarantee, particularly since Mitch McConnell yesterday said that he was ready to let states declare bankruptcy rather than, you know, send them more money in order to cover stuff like this.
So where would this leave Black folks in particular if this plays out in the direction that it's going? People are asking to go back to work. And, you know, I think we've been nationally, they've been highlighting, oh, they're going to open up nail salons and gyms and things like that. But there's lots of other jobs that people are rightfully concerned about where they may go back, where they may be forced to go back and, you know, run the risk of getting sick, et cetera, et cetera. How do you see this playing out in Georgia?
So Georgia and nationally aren't too different. The unemployment rate for African Americans is a little higher than two times the unemployment rate for white people. Like, that's That's been true for 30 years. As an aside, Donald Trump jumping up and down and saying, hey, I dropped the unemployment rate for black people lower than anybody else has ever done that. It's still been twice as high as it is for white people. That disparity has done nothing to change that. In fact, it's grown a little worse. So when we're looking at unemployment rates of 16%, what you're looking at really is an unemployment rate in Georgia of probably 10% for white people and 30% for black people. And it's going to devastate communities here. Like, I live in a part of the world that didn't completely dig out of the recession from 2008. Property values fell. Houses could be bought for $25,000, you know, a half a mile from where I live in 2009 and 2010. It was madness. And the amount of wealth in the black community that was destroyed here has never been rebuilt. That's going to happen again. It may take 25 years to dig out. I'm not sure that it'll ever dig out. I'm deeply concerned, and I don't have a good answer. I can't say that I have some policy prescription that solves this problem, because the problem is really just that big.
You mentioned that you observed the alt-right. Is this a coming together of the alt-right with vitriol towards black, brown, and other folks in corporations? Is this corporations just acting on their own and, you know, screw everybody, whoever gets in the way is going to get it? What's this? What are we looking at in terms of this? These actions that are being pushed? Is it hatred? Is it economic concern? What's really driving this?
So racism is racism, and it's been here forever. I don't think it's gotten worse. I think it's just getting filmed. That said, we live in an unprecedented moment where Republicans are counting on that as part of their base in order to win as an electoral strategy. They want the 5% of the public who are generally too racist even to vote to come out in support of this president. And there's fear of a loss of power. I mean, it's fundamentally, it's that simple. A majority of people who are under the age of 18 are non-white today. Like, at some point soon, a voting majority of the United States is going to be non-white. And that may be the end of, you know, white supremacy as a political power in the United States. They want to extend to that as long as they can. And to some degree, they believe that this is their last stand, that whatever comes after Trump is going to be the end. Like, so they're trying to get everything they can now while they have time. And that's what you're seeing. You're seeing people who believe that they are at the end of a long, desperate struggle that they are losing. And it creates extremism. I'm really worried. Like, we are in the conditions of, you know, massive social upheaval where violence is possible, and where political change is hard to predict. I think people need to be vigilant.
George, my last question to you. You know, we're on the air down in Atlanta, so we may have a two-parter. For the people that live in your great state and in Atlanta, what would you ask them to do? And for people that are hearing us outside of the country, whether they're in the Bay Area or the other cities that we're broadcasted in, what would you have them to do at this moment in time?
Well, the first thing is stay home. Doesn't matter what Governor Kemp says, it's not safe yet. There will be a moment to come out, and it's actually not going to be that much longer, but it isn't now. And I'm speaking for what I believe is the consensus of the people in Georgia. Like, our governor's decisions aren't reflecting the public's view of what makes sense. A bowling alley or a restaurant or a movie theater may open, but it will be open and empty. And we know this. So that's the first thing, stay home. The second thing is, don't be afraid to speak. This is a moment when the voice of the masses matters. I think that we can create changes that were impossible to conceive 6 months ago, simply because we have finally found a way to unite ourselves around a common cause, and that's protecting our lives. This is a moment for political activism. I think people need to engage one another and to talk to their elected representatives and make them understand that this is that support for the public and support for public health is critical. It is the moment in which assumptions about what makes sense from a commercial perspective and how business and government and capitalism and our society works, this is a moment to reevaluate and make changes. That's what I would say.
We definitely appreciate that. That's the voice of George Chidi. He's a journalist. He's a public policy director. If people want to get a hold of you, read any of your writings, where would you direct them?
Come to Decaturish. That is Decaturish, DECATURISH.com.
There you have it. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
Hard Knock. Turn the speakers in your car up. Quality program. Turn in for the real talk. Don't stop. E-Man at it again. Sandman, Daddy Man. Chris Juwan Kim. Innovation. Stimulating ill conversation. Anything else? Just imitation. Simulation. Step into the zone. The Bay Area zone. Hard Knock Radio. Let's go. Big shout out Anita and Davey D. Yeah, right. Feel me. Yeah. Honing down at Hard Knock Radio.
Hard Knock Radio.
Kind of crazy though. Oakland stand up.
Yeah. Stand up.
Ensemble Big Night Wolves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bellevue. Come on. Check out.
Why every novice think they hard knock when they ain't gone all in and ain't paid the cost of the fee? Hating that they made they beats trying to eat till they're ready from the steel gray beats. Say please. Maybe they'll save you a seat at the table with a great bread making a speech. Say some peace to their lovers, I name with a please. Maybe some shade on your name.
Real Talk Radio.
You and I rocking with the best in the West.
Yes, Coach. Monday through Friday.
Sing it.